the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome back to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. This is, what is it, 154?
I'm looking at the whatever number here. It is. The only number I could truly guarantee is 72K. Other than that, I have no idea what's going
154.
On.
My name is Joey. That's Len. I'm very, very much under the weather here. So glad to be with you playing my Jordan flu game. But you can't miss a day like today, right? All-time high. Easy, like pound through that old high. Print 72. Maintain. I think we might touch 73 here in a little while. Looks like we're trying to. And on a day like that, you can't really take a vacation. So I'm glad to be here with you, buddy. What's going on? How are you over there?
Yeah, living the dream. It's all fiat too. Remember the number, like we discussed last week. Until we get to like a really significant high, what is it, 85, 90, whatever the fuck it really is. Yeah. It's just it's a fake high. It's good to celebrate it. It's good to point at all the no coiners out there that were dunking on us for the past 2 years and change. But the reality is, at least, you know, me and I think every other Bitcoin understands the same thing. We know deep down this is just, it's not really at the all-time high when you look at what truly is inflation. But Joey, still a good day to celebrate. We hit a number we've never reached before. A lot of people are happy, but a lot of people seem to be kind of salty at the same time, which is very odd. This pump, I expected more cheering, more jubilee that comes along with it. You know, like we're happy. But is there anything that's like, do you see like, a lot of people that are just like meh about this thing. Like, it seems like it's just a meh fucking high.
Yeah, there's not. Like it's weird.
I expect more, but like,
isn't it? Do you think it's because people are like, I was talking to Wayfaring and SBA about this. I can't remember if I said it to you too, but this time around, it feels like there's only so many kinds of people left who are doubting Bitcoin and don't have any. And the overwhelming majority of them, at least in normie land, are actually might even be in like traditional finance world too. The only people that are left are people who don't have any and will never buy any because they don't want to admit they're wrong. They won't swallow their pride. And so that's all coming from their camp. And then I think from our camp, there's some salt around the price just absolutely tore faces off for the last 3 months, basically. And people didn't get a chance to stack as much as they wanted to. I kind of feel that pain. But otherwise, I mean, you're always going to get people who are salty or at least pretending to be salty online for engagement and people who are genuinely happy. I know I'm happier than a pig in shit, honestly. It's been a good couple of months here. And I mean, look, we've been telling you guys for so long that this was going to come at some point. The ETFs were going to come and traditional finance was going to come and things were going to start to break. And even before things have really started to break, which we'll get into today, you're starting to see people pour in, man. Everybody wanted access to this thing and couldn't get it because there's, you know, a set of archaic laws in most of the modern world that prevented them from doing so in tax efficient vehicles, prevented them from doing so in our IRAs and other registered accounts. And now that stuff's available. What did you think was going to happen? You know, I don't think that the SEC thought this was going to happen. I certainly don't think the White House thought it was going to happen, although they have a price prediction that made me laugh earlier today. And I don't think that any Bitcoiners thought it was going to happen either. I think this is wildly outside of most of our expectations. So while I am thrilled about the all-time high, can't tell me it didn't come a little fast. It did come a little fast for me.
As fast as it came up, it could equally go down. Once the sentiment changes and it becomes negative and people are selling left, right, and center, this ETF seems to be a multiplying effect when going up, but it's probably going to have the same multiplying effect when going down. So when it does start going down, it's going to go down very hard. I'm not saying it's going to happen today or tomorrow, but nothing goes up forever. And once it starts to go down, what's going to be the floor, especially when you have now everybody selling with the ETF. Now, keep in mind, there's only so much they can sell with the ETF. They can't sell any more than they have on their balance sheet, but they can sell, you know, theoretically up to zero. They'll never do that. There's always going to be people holding. But with respect, you mentioned something that this created a whole new opportunity for people out there to invest and put into tax efficient vehicles, but they existed before. You could have bought Bitcoin through a holding company that you set up and did it with, I think, a Roth IRA.
No one's really gonna do this though.
Well, like, it's not nobody was gonna do that. it's the thing is, the opportunity existed. People chose not to take advantage of that. And through that method, you hold on to your own keys as well. So you get the added advantage, or staying neutral, because that's what Bitcoin is. You're essentially holding onto your keys. You're not playing at a disadvantage with the ETF. So that always existed. Anybody that had a little bit of money to set up the holding company and go ahead with it, from what I understand, it's just a few hundred dollars to set it up. This is from what I understand. I could be wrong because I've never gone through it, but that's all somebody needed to do in order to take advantage of that, and through tax efficient means. They didn't do it through sheer laziness or for something else. Now we're using the extremely lazy method of the ETF. Here you go. Here's my money. Hold on to my keys at the same time. Come on. How good is that? That's not fucking Bitcoin. That's fiat.
I'm with you there. I don't think whatever. We can talk about the holding company, the ETFs, the price and all that. Maybe we should do the sponsors of the show first, since they do pay us for this airtime. EasyDNS. You guys know Mark. You love Mark. Best place for you to host your content. Friendly neighborhood domain registrar. Mark has got tons of good stuff going on over there. So you can obviously start a website if you want, hence the name there. But on top of that, if you want to bring your email over, you want to do virtual private server stuff, so maybe your Nostr Relay, your BTC Pay server, your Bitcoin node, you want to do a nodeless implementation, you decide. Whatever it is for you, you decide. Mark and the team will help you out. And they've done a great deal of good for our website and for us over the last year or so. And we were almost going to say tonight that we have something else to talk about from that camp, but I guess we'll save it for next week. You guys are going to absolutely love it. I'll tell you that. It's a great idea. But in the meantime, whatever your, idea is, your big idea for your business or your website, whatever, your blog, your Twitter name, I don't know, whatever you want to do, go over to EasyDNS and tell Mark we sent you. Use the code CBP Media. You get half off your first round of buys. Can't beat it, man. Can't beat it. Who else?
Bull Bitcoin. You can buy your Bitcoin. You can sell your Bitcoin. And I think there may be a lot of people out there that may consider selling their Bitcoin given the price. I keep saying this every week because we're getting to a new high with respect to the price of Bitcoin. But the opportunity is there. If you want to sell your Bitcoin, you could do so with Bull Bitcoin. And if you want to buy, and the fees are getting rather high, they're not right now, but they can in the future. You could not only buy on-chain and be subjected to the high fees, or you could buy Lightning. So there's lots of opportunities here that you could buy with Lightning. And you could also pay your bills with your Bitcoin. So you could trade your Bitcoin that has gone up quite a bit and use that to pay some of the bills that you have all with Bull Bitcoin. And you could also buy gift cards and use that in the real world. So you could spend your Bitcoin indirectly through Bull Bitcoin to buy gift cards and go like the Fortinos or Home Depot or where the heck you got to go. And you're spending Bitcoin just like the way Satoshi wanted you to do. But the best thing they have over there is the KYC free buys. You go to Canada Post, load up your account with Cuckbucks, Canadian Cuckbucks. And with that, you could buy some KYC free Bitcoin. We talk about the virtues of KYC free Bitcoin all the time. It is a good way to stack Bitcoin. Again, never mix your KYC and KYC free stack, but Bull Bitcoin gives you the opportunity to buy KYC free. Very cheap, very easy. Check it out.
Insane, man. Great sponsors. Where should we start? We got a lot to talk about today. Price is one thing. We should talk about the boost, I guess, if we got some boost, and the housekeeping for this week as well.
Yeah, so the boosts, give me one second. We didn't get too many this week, which is odd. We're getting a lot of people streaming sats and streaming sats that like four figures, but they're not sending us a boost. I suggest turn that streaming shit off, send us a boost for less than what you would normally stream us, and you keep more sats in your pocket. Plus, you could have us read a message for you, but yeah, only got three this week.
I'll literally read anything on the air.
Just about. As long as the top five boosts. Like, we only got three this week, yeah. So. Rander 444 sats. He says, stay savage and stack sats. Agreed. 100%. Mo BTC Dick writes in 550 sats. Keep in mind the time frame. He wrote this last week. He said, did we in fact hit an all-time high? It just doesn't feel special this time around.
He's right. I don't know how special. It's great. And we kind of talked about it last week, but like, do you feel like it was 2021 all over again? I didn't hear anyone playing Pump It Up. I mean, Creed, obviously the flavor of the day, but still, it doesn't feel like it's this insane kind of bull party, right?
No, it's definitely the last one was is we're still locked at home. It was very, very shortly after the lockdown, a little bit of everything. This time around, I don't know. it's not the same vibe. I'm happy, but until we get to 100K in today's dollars, not, I'm talking 6 months, I'm not talking 2 years from now, in today's dollars, 100K, then it's going to be party time. Until then, keep stacking.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Shout out to the chat, man. There's 100 fucking people here, which is...
No, it's incorrect.
I don't know. It looks like 100 people between YouTube, Twitter.
Yeah, it's all that jazz. Rumble, whatever. And all.
Well, listen,
yeah,
if you're watching, we appreciate it.
I got one more.
Is there more boosts? You got a couple more boosts?
One more I have to go through. And Sir Snacks a lot. He writes in 1,000 sats. He writes into you, Joey. Curious if Joey has paid off his line of credit when he back smashed purchased Bitcoin. Guy is pulling off a sailor. I remember you did that, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 months ago.
It was the day the ETF launched, the drop on that Friday, or the week the ETF launched, I should say. That Friday we hit a drop. I think it hit the low 40s and I did a smash buy $2,000. Have I paid it off? No. So I should probably do that at some point. But I have to say I'm happy about how that turned out. I'm not not angry about that one. I did take a little bit of shit from you about that. I think not many other people.
I didn't take it. I was like, oh no. I was like, why do that? You know, like I would, you know, don't borrow, use what you can. Going into debt is, you know, it's a tough thing to do. I wouldn't recommend it. And if only, like, I would suggest use whatever you have extra at the end of the day. And that's the best, because, you know, it's not going to impact your ability to pay bills. It's not going to impact your ability to live your life. Although you could scale back your life and buy more Bitcoin, but man, credit, like borrowing it, oh, that's a tough way to go. But it works for some people, and hopefully it works for you too. It is working for you.
Yeah. Okay. So this week on CBP, we did have a guest booked, but they slid out to April, I think you said, right? So we have to reschedule that. But I'm trying to get Tour. I haven't touched base with Tour. I tried to message him yesterday. I'm going to try and set that up for this week. If not, though,
Do something together.
We'll do a nooner, or if you guys have an idea for a guest, send it to us and we'll talk to them. We'll get them on the show for Wednesday
night. We'll play NHL 94 against each other. We'll have a matchup.
Stream it, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that.
I love it, yeah.
You got that little console, like the little handheld console, right?
It's over there. Yeah.
Is it any good?
I play it once in a while. It's kind of just like a way to kill time when I'm doing other stuff, honestly. I don't know if I would buy it again, but it has been fun to play some of the old games. I'm a big Pokemon guy. I love like games where RNG rules the day and you got to grind a little bit to get stuff done. And all the custom ROMs for Pokemon they're pretty good, I got to say.
I just have to say, somebody's asking in the chat, is there any Bitcoin meetups taking place? There's one taking place at Innocente Brewery.
Bakery.
Bakery, because that's, anyways, Innocente Brewery in Waterloo. April 20th. I think it's supposed to start around 5:30 p.m. give or take. So if you just go search on Twitter, Innocente Brewery Twitter, Bitcoin meetup, you'll find
the or message exact... D's running it, right? He's organizing it or trying to.
No, he's just like a participant, just like you and I. Okay. Well, actually, no, I think we're giving away a shirt or something, or some shirt. I don't know what's going on, because we're official sponsors of that. So
I don't know. More. I still don't really know how that happened, but I'll be there. Should be good. 4:20 plays it.
Are you going?
4:20 half it. Yeah, I'm gonna try. If it's a Saturday, I'm gonna go.
It is a Saturday.
I'm gonna try and go. Unless I have like a football playoff game, then maybe not. But I should be okay. I think it's all right. It's a week before the playoffs start, I'm pretty sure.
Are we staying up late over there if the halving takes place? Are we gonna be like hardcore?
You guys want to grind out these parties and just like make them the least enjoyable possible experience? Like you're staying up late 40 minutes from home. Like, no, I will not be doing that, but I will go for a
it's
beer
an hour if
everyone's going. Yeah, it's far for you, I know.
It's a, you know, and my card, if it gets there, it's a miracle, but I keep pushing it. And it's just tough going up hills these days.
We got a couple of other meetups in the chat. One smart fella, Halifax and Charlottetown on the East Coast do meetups every month. And then Boom Dust in Ottawa at the Glebe Central Pub this Wednesday. I think Boomer does meetups almost every month now, right? Pretty sure in Ottawa.
I think it's once a month.
Yeah.
And he's been trying to get a whole bunch of more prominent people that are outside of Bitcoin to come there, given that, you know, this proximity to, you know,
yes,
nation capitals of people,
yes,
coming in.
Yes, capital region. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's,
shall we? Where do you want to start?
I'll do the Bitcoin pump, because that seems to be the biggest.
It's the news of the day.
One. Well, before we even talk about what happened today, today was a fun one. Woke up this morning and geez, the price of Bitcoin was 72-ish, 71-ish. Interestingly enough, Joey, this is the third Sunday in a row where we went to bed and wake up in the morning, Monday morning, and the price pumped. There's a pattern here. I don't know what is causing it, but for whatever reason, the Sunday overnight, there seems to be a lot of money coming in and boosting up the price of Bitcoin. I'm not sure exactly what's the cause of it, but that just seems to be. So, you know, if you want to trade it, go ahead, but I wouldn't recommend it. Anyways, one thing I do want to talk about is Coinbase, because they do this thing over and over again, but they didn't do it today. So good for them that they were either asleep at the switch or they just didn't give a shit anymore. Because up until today, there was three separate incidents that Coinbase were having issues. And it was a variety of issues where people were unable to get onto your account. They couldn't see anything, any balance. So server issues, then it was technical issues, a whole bunch of these fucking things. But yeah, the funny thing is it happened three times. And each of those times was when the price of Bitcoin was running up. So, you know, as a fan of baseball, that's a strikeout, man. Like, you know, fucking, I'd say go back to the dugout and fucking think about what you've done. But somebody mentioned on Twitter, and they said this, and I fucking laughed when I saw that. They said that Coinbase is like the circuit breaker that trips when the price of Bitcoin goes up. And I, for some reason, I found it to be hilarious. I don't think that's the case. But the question remains, though, like, what happened? Like, for me, I don't think it's on purpose. I don't think there's any nefarious activities going on. They're trying to do anything. Because let's be honest, how much influence does Coinbase have with respect to lowering the price of Bitcoin if they go offline? It doesn't change anything with Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is what it is. Just because you can't buy from a particular exchange, does it make Bitcoin any less valuable? I would argue no, but somehow.
What do you think it is? You think it's just like they're, I mean, they have a history dating back to 2016, 17 of having trouble anytime there's a price rip. And, you know, I think Wayfaring, who wrote an article for the website you guys should check out, made a note of the traffic on Coinbase during these big price rips. If you look at this price rip compared to 2020, 2021, significantly less volume on the platform. So to your point, Len, you know, can they really affect the price? Probably not, but it makes it even weirder that they keep going down as the price rips, because more people are trading off of that platform than ever before. And, you know, as Wayfaring points out in his article, there's just not enough traffic to, you know, expect an interruption in service. It's not good, man. It's not good at all. And they're the only guys in the space, really. Like, what have you been doing for the last 5 years besides, you know, running your own shitty layer two base token and you know, refusing to say Bitcoin on Twitter? It certainly hasn't been anything to do with preparing your service for, you know, the highway full of people who are going to come and use it during the next bull cycle. It's frustrating. It's big time frustrating. I mean, how could it not be?
I agree, but they're not truly associated with Bitcoin, right? Because if you look at the services they offer, it's a variety of services. Sure, they sell Bitcoin, but they sell a whole bunch of other stuff, including they provide staking services for some really shitty products out there.
Yeah.
So if you think about what is Coinbase, well, they are a variety of things. It's certainly just not Bitcoin. So for them going down, I don't think it's a huge thing in the grand scheme of things. I still don't understand how this impacted their price negatively, you know. And in terms of the volume, Dan Webb from the High Hash Rate podcast, he was saying a couple of weeks ago when he was on our show, when I was interviewing him, he was saying that the volume, if it spikes, that causes a problem. If it's a gradual run up, then it's okay, because then they're able to spin up new computers and have everything just catch up. But a sudden spike, that could be problematic. I don't know if that's the case with Coinbase. This is his thinking. It could be totally wrong. I don't know, but it sounds plausible. But you're right. If you go look at the volume, which took place, I think it was April 2021, the volume at that time was the highest I've seen it. And there were so many orders being put in for the buys and sells. At that time, Binance went down, Coinbase went down, and a whole bunch of others. But the amount of volume that we experienced in the past couple of weeks, it pales in comparison to what happened during April 2021. Now, I have to really look at it more in depth. Maybe it's just I'm looking at this, you know, sort of rose-colored glasses, but that's the way I remember. It was just crazy fucking volume, and a few exchanges went down. Now, another thing is there is no Binance US. At least I don't think they're operating in the United States. So with that being the case, you now have the rest of them picking up the slack. But you now have Kraken, which is doing well. There you go. So what is that yellow line there? What year is that? 2020.
Yeah. So this is for people who are listening only. There's a chart in Wayfaring's article that has the volume by year on Coinbase. So you have that 2020 blow up here. That's got to be March 2020 probably, right?
Yes.
And then you see again here, this is probably that April 2021 and then November 2021.
That's probably May. That second one is probably May when the China banned Bitcoin mining.
Why would that lead to a huge spike in?
At the bottom, 2022.
Yeah.
Go back a couple of months.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. This is too, it is too close. You're right.
So I would say that's April and May or slash June. That's my guess. Yeah.
Okay. So then, the point of the chart is that if you look at the traffic from 24, I mean, come on, it pales in comparison. It's nothing, right? It's Muggsy Bogues next to George Mirzin. And so what?
No. Who is it? It's Bogues next to Deke.
Deke, you want to do Dikembe? Okay, sure.
Because weren't they on the same team? Didn't they play together in the Sixers, or am I wrong?
I don't think so.
Or that's Spud Webb.
Webb, maybe, but not...
Okay.
But anyway, so the point is that the volume here is like way low. It's super low. And there's no reason, 3 years later, 2 years later, that you should be having the same problems. It doesn't make sense, right? And so I think when people say, I'm with you. I don't think it's like on purpose, but when people say that there's something going on at Coinbase that's causing the price to stop ripping, I think that's true. I just don't think it's intentional. I think it's just, incompetence and lack of prioritization by them, right? They've been working on a million things, but clearly not making sure that everyone can get to their Bitcoin to make a trade when the price is ripping. So, make it that what you will. Pick a better service. Pick Bull Bitcoin. Pick anyone that'll let you go to Shoppers Drug Mart and give you cash, and your cash will be in your account when you get back. Piece of cake. Is nothing to it. You never have to worry about that. You never have to worry about Bull Bitcoin going down. You just bring your money to Shoppers and that's it.
Even Swan, we haven't talked all that fondly of them lately, but Dan was there to point out that they didn't go down in the past little while. They were able to stay up, and they're Bitcoin only, right? That's the only product they sell. So, if you're going to buy, that may be another option. Of course, that's custodial. So I would always suggest non-custodial services, at least, if you're going to buy, pull it out right away, but that's just a topic for another time. But yeah, Coinbase is fucked up. And, they're the largest exchange out there. Do they eclipse Binance? I don't know. At least for
ETF
public
trading. Custodian, largest exchange, the most, friendly with the government. They're basically an arm of the US government at this point. I think that's fair to say. And this is their, this is the way they behave. I still have my bet, of course.
You mentioned something
like get super rich off that, but
you mentioned they're the custodian of the ETFs, not just them. Also they custodian some of MicroStrategy's Bitcoin as well. Portion of that. I don't know what portion of it. So why, after seeing all these issues they have with, volume being just meh, why would we trust them to hold on to our keys? There's going to come a time when you want to take your Bitcoin off. What happens if volatility is so high and volume is off the charts? You can't sell your fucking Bitcoin. So you can't sell your ETF because they're just not going to allow you to do so. Or they're not going to let you pull out or something along those lines. This is a good exercise for people out there that just don't understand. Please look at custodying your Bitcoin. That's one of the beautiful things that Bitcoin allows you to do. You can hold on to your Bitcoin, just like if you were to hold on to your gold. Now, you're not having your gold held by the bank. You have it in your possession. It's in your hands, so to speak, digitally at least. So that's what Bitcoin allows you to do. Learn how to do that. If you could do that, you've created so much flexibility moving forward, and it's one less hurdle or many hurdles that you have to jump moving forward. And that's going to be a huge thing when shit hits the fan.
Yeah. I agree with you there. Pump's been fun. It's it's not over, I don't think. So we'll wait and see where the price goes. But I think now, 100K by halving it's in play for sure. I mean, there's obviously a pretty strong correlation with the S&P and the NASDAQ at this point. And NVIDIA is basically holding the world economy together like a glue stick in a hurricane at this stage. But, as you mentioned, we've had a couple of days where we've been up and the NASDAQ's been down. We're kind of closely correlated to gold now. And again, like we talked about on the show, there's a lot of people who spent a lot of time and staked their reputation, I think in some cases, on how this thing was just a vacuum for liquidity. And would only go up in price when the market was flooded with stimulus money and money was cheap via rates. But I mean, what do you have to say about this? Rates are 5.25, whatever they are in the States, 5.25 here, 5.25 in Europe, central banks clearly working together to try and keep the economy in a quote unquote restrictive environment. And it's not working. It's just not working. So, I mean, if you think they're going to cut this year, one rate cut, quarter point or half a point is all it's going to take to send this thing to 85 from here. And that's assuming we don't get there on our own with the ETF inflows before then. And the halving, I mean, all this stuff is, you got to be crazy to be selling now is the sort of point I'm getting to here. I can't imagine looking at this and saying to somebody like, yeah, this is the time I'm going to get out. I got to get out right now. It's insane. I know there's people who bought, you know, at 60K, 50K, the last peak, haven't looked at it since and now see it at the high and just get out. Fine. I don't know how many people are like that, but if you're selling in this environment with everything stacked against you right now, in terms of macroeconomic factors, the only thing working in your favor is the ETFs. The broader market, save for NVIDIA, basically everything else is tumbling, maybe Meta as well. You're going to sell at an all-time high in that environment? I don't know, man. Like that's to me, not financial advice ever from us, but not a great move. I would say not a great move.
No, if they need the money to pay off bills or they want to use that the gains to purchase something, all the more power to them. This Bitcoin is not one of the things it's used for is medium exchange. It's not you're not supposed to hold it until the end of your days. So if somebody, you know, if they have bills to pay and it's just too much for them to pay it, all the more power to them. If they could sell whatever they have, whatever gain, and make some gains out of it and pay off those bills and live a life that could potentially be much easier moving forward. I have no issues with that. Or if they want to use that to buy a new car or whatever, a new house, whatever. There's only, you can't live in Bitcoin.
I just think there's a lot of stuff I would sell first before that at the moment. I just want to point out Grace2 is on X commenting about the volume, saying the volume is lower on that chart I just showed from Wayfaring because less gets traded as fiat price of Bitcoin increases. I'm not sure if that's accounted for in Wayfaring's chart, but that's a good point. So it's something to think about. I know Wayfaring was in the chat earlier. I'm not sure if he's still there, but yeah, I mean, you don't want to be a forced seller, right? I think that's the other, that is a piece of advice I'd give people. That is financial advice. Don't be a forced seller. Don't put yourself in a situation where you need to get out of Bitcoin as soon as the high hits because you took on some stupid debt or you have an expense that's not really a necessity, but just a want, and you just have to get out now because you didn't save enough money on the side. You don't have any cash, you don't have any stocks, you don't have any whatever. You don't want to be a forced seller of this thing, not right now, which is rare because I think in the past, you know, if I look at the COVID drop, people sold Bitcoin first. When that stock market crashed, and they had to cover shorts or whatever else they had to do. I'm not sure you'd see the same result now if you ended up in that situation. I'm not sure people would go to sell Bitcoin first. We'll see, maybe, if we do get a significant, you know, shot to the ribs here, economically speaking. But for now, I just think, like, man, you'd be crazy to be selling this thing. It's just getting started, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you in spirit, but there are going to be times, one-offs, that you're going to have to. Even in the chat, we had somebody mentioning, I don't want to say his name just in case, we'll dox him, said he had to sell to pay a car repair bill. So yeah, I mean, if you don't have anything else.
An expense,
I mean, this happens, and this is Bitcoin. It's, you know, it's used as a medium of exchange. But remember, the one thing that I always say, and because I'm here and I don't want to give bad advice, especially with CRA, remember, any trade with Bitcoin when you're moving that into anything else, it's a taxable event.
Yeah.
So once you exchange Bitcoin to something else, you can figure out what something else is. It's a taxable event. Make sure you record that and document it and declare that to CRA or whatever tax jurisdiction you live in, if it's required, just in case.
Yeah. Be on the up and up, you know, don't.
Anyway. Somebody else who doesn't plan to sell, in fact, they don't have the opportunity yet to sell, but they may want to buy, is Arizona. And they're conjuring up the idea of adding Bitcoin ETFs to the retirement portfolio. And this comes off because the Arizona Senate, they passed a bill to propose them to add this to their retirement portfolio. So the Arizona Senate is on board with this. And the two state portfolios are the Arizona State Retirement System and the Public Safety Personnel Retirement System. And the They each hold $49.1 billion for the first one, and the second one, $19.5 billion. So it's a significant amount. This has Dennis Porter's fingerprints all over it, right? Like, this is just a breaking right away. So I'm looking at this, and the amount of money they have assets under management, there's no way in heck you're going to put a large percentage. It's going to be very, very small, 1%, a portion of 1%, whatever the heck it may be, towards Bitcoin. This is probably the first of many, especially with this run-up. There's going to be a lot of FOMO coming in. Bonds aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, you know, in terms of managing your, keeping your head above water. And you're talking about the stock market, aside from Meta and Nvidia for the past little while, it's been sideways movement for the most part. Didn't Apple and Microsoft do pretty well recently, though?
Apple's having a hard time. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Why?
These stalwarts make seven. I don't know. I mean, they released a virtual reality headset that looks like shit. Like, it's not, you know, like, there's no innovation. We're kind of stuck. To take a phrase from Lindy Man, we're in stuck culture mode here. Like, the innovation is becoming more and more difficult because everything's got to be consumer facing. Consumers don't want to change. So, I'm not 100% sure that that those companies have an easy road ahead of them here. Plus, you know, I've heard whispers on the Apple side that Tim is, you know, thinking about retiring, which is crazy. He's basically the last of the old guard, right? He's been there for a long time.
Yeah. And those are some hard hours, especially under Steve Jobs. He wasn't an easy guy to work for, and he was one of the two under him. Him and Johnny Ive, I think, was the other one.
And so Ive left years ago, right? So
he did. When he wasn't picked, I think he left. I think I could be wrong. Those are some hard hours he put in. And yeah, he's not getting, you know, he's not a spring chicken. I'm going to guess he's in his early 60s. Am I right with his age? I could be wrong.
Tim?
Yeah.
He's probably 62, 63. Yeah.
Yeah. So early 60s. So, like, you know, he's done his time in purgatory, so to speak. Let him enjoy the rest of his life. He doesn't have to spend the rest of his life over there. But anyways, to go back to Arizona State, I think this is something that is going to be copied, especially if they're able to put some on their balance sheet relatively soon and make gains.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't other states do the same thing? Especially, like, once you see gains, you see, like, your neighbors doing something, mm-hmm. you tend to want to copy what they're doing. And even if it's a small amount, even if they're putting like 0.5% in, which is a significant amount, and that outperforms every other asset class they have. And in some cases, if it does well enough, it might be the best performing asset they have just in terms of actual dollars they're getting from it.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense that others are going to do the same. So I see this as good, but ETFs, I wish they could hold their own keys. There's got to be a way Arizona could hold their own keys, right? If they want to talk to me, I'll show them the way. There's, you know, we'll figure this out. There's got to be some solution we could come to. But either way, there's going to be more and more money piling into these Bitcoin ETFs. And
why would they not, right? Like, these are the guys who are in the most trouble in terms of their allocation to bonds and fixed income. You need something that's going to return for you. And, you know, you can use Bitcoin, I think, at some point in the near future. I was actually just saying this to my dad this morning that, you know, at some point in the near future, you're going to be able to use Bitcoin as collateral for loans pretty regularly. I think banks will get more involved in custody and allow you to do that. And pensions and whatnot and public treasuries can do this too. There's no reason it has to be just a MicroStrategy thing to put it on your balance sheet. Now, Arizona can't issue equity to do it. Of course, they can't just, you know, spend debt, but
why not?
Well, I mean, they're things, but they probably aren't doing it for that. But it is funny though. Like, the only thing it takes is someone, like you mentioned, saying to their investment board, "Man, see what Arizona just did? They're up, you know, 38% this year on that investment. You know, that $1 billion is $2 billion after 5 years, or that $1 billion is $6 billion after 10 years. We should have done that. What are we gonna do? We gotta keep up." Because you're ultimately not trying to keep up with the index once other people in your silo are using Bitcoin. You're trying to keep up with Bitcoin. And for the first time now, a lot of these, you know, traditionally conservative investment vehicles are looking at Bitcoin, and they're going to start to see the gains. They're going to start to get a taste for what it's like to experience an asset that has no counterparty risk. There is no quarterly reporting. There is no execution problems. There is no CEO sex scandal. It's just there. It's a scarce asset. It's you know, digitally held, decentralized, and it's easy, honestly, when you compare it to all these other things that they're worried about, you know, tertiary side effects and risks concerning risk, right? So to me, this is a no-brainer. I expect to see more of it. And like we talked about last week, a lot of the ETFs that these guys buy anyways, when they're buying equities for their pensions, especially, we talked about Ontario, but we can talk about these guys too. They're going to start having Bitcoin in their ETFs. Like fixed income ETFs are not going to be all bonds, all gold, all cash anymore. You know, like they're going to be some Bitcoin in there, and you're going to be saying to yourself as a board or as an investment, committee, why are we buying Bitcoin through this vehicle, but not spot and holding it and taking advantage of the stuff that it allows us to do, the optionality, like you said earlier, of holding your own keys. You're going to start seeing this more and more. I think it's inevitable, and I'm looking forward to it, man. It's like a whole new world for these guys that we've been talking about for years, but is now just opening up to people who, as I've mentioned, are going to come into the space with a bunch of new ideas. Some of them we're not going to like, some of them we are. And it's exciting for people in Bitcoin. It should be anyways. And it should be exciting for people who are getting into it now for the first time too.
You talked about gold. You just mentioned it very briefly. The circle jerk they were having, was it last week? The weekend, I don't know if it was when the price of gold was around or reached 2,200, right? That was
didn't reach it yet. It got over 21. Oh, it's 21, close, sorry, to 22 now though, Len. It's like it's 2,182. Like that's a high number.
Well, somebody in our chat, and I don't want to dox him just in case he doesn't want to be doxed. He did mention that adjusted for inflation, that number is the all-time high for gold is 2,800. So if you do the math, we're a long way away from that.
That's the inflation adjusted high. Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. So we're fucking 2,100 or 2,200 with respect to gold. Give me a fucking break. Do the numbers, add it up, and you'll see it's just they're still treading water at best.
Yeah.
And it's a manipulated market altogether. But another pension, or at least something, sorry, another investment fund. In this case, this is the Stanford University student organization. This is the Charles R. Blythe Fund. This, they mentioned that they are going to be looking into buying some, or they already have allocated some of their portfolio into Bitcoin. Now, this fund, it's only a six-figure portfolio. Right now, it has stocks, bonds, other assets, and now Bitcoin. So it's not a huge huge value here. Six figures is small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. But what they are doing is interesting, and it could be a copy pasta that could be done moving forward with other schools. So 7% of their portfolio has been allocated towards Bitcoin, and they said that they have purchased the BlackRock ETF when it was at $45,000. So in a very short order, their investment outperformed everything else.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why they opted for the ETF and not hold your own keys. There may be some limitations from the fund preventing them from holding these keys. I do not know, but hopefully they will learn about the fundamentals that Bitcoin has to offer and encourage them to buy spot Bitcoin and put it in cold storage. But with respect for them to their Bitcoin holdings right now, this is really bullish. And looking at a whole bunch of student-led, this is a student-led initiative. This is the next generation of people coming up. And if they're showing that they could outperform these geezers out there that are managing these large pension funds, why wouldn't anybody else do the same thing? This I find to be extremely bullish. And I'd love to see that this could be copied more so moving forward. But they also have to take into consideration the risk that comes along with it. What goes up can come down. And like I said at the beginning of the show, this could come down hard, fast. And I don't know what the bottom would be. Are they ready for it? Who the fuck knows? But this is fun to watch.
Why do you think that? I mean, I get the caution on your part, but what makes you think that the crashes are going to be as violent as they've been in the past now that you have this kind of perpetual ETF bid? I mean, the inflows are, 200, 300 million a day, more sometimes. I think last Friday we crossed 500 million in inflows. So what makes you think the demand? I mean, you're eventually going to have GBTC stop selling and the inflows, I mean, they might level out, but it's like what would the crash have to be for it to be violent like it's been in the past? I don't want to bite my tongue here later on, but like if you told me to place a bet on whether or not I thought we were done with 50% crashes or not, I think I would say we were done with them. 50% or more, I think I'd say we were done. I think we're going to be a lot more tame now as far as these like wild volatility swings in the price. just because of that perpetual bid, that floor that the ETFs help set. You can't sell on Saturday if you're an ETF guy. So like that's another thing, right? Like the markets are closed. People gather their wits. They talk to their advisors. They do all these things. It's another point of friction. And that's where the money is, right? It's the guys who have been holding so long spot, they're not going to sell on a price dip anyway. So if you look at the HODL waves, like let's say if you're a 12-month holder or whatever the number is, you're not going to sell it at 20%. So you're not going to contribute to more of a dip. If you're an ETF person, you're not going to be able to sell as soon as you want to because you have to go through your advisor potentially. And if you're someone who holds ETF or you're on your own, I mean, maybe you sell, but do you sell all of it or do you buy more? Like have you learned about the BTFD sort of mantra, right? It's a mimetic world. I think there's potential that we've kind of seen the last of this because of these things. I don't want to jinx it, but when I think about all those things together, it seems unlikely we continue to get these like 75, 80% drops, even 50%. Like I said earlier, seems like a bit of a stretch now.
What was the number you quoted coming in? 200 million a day?
Yeah, 200 or 300, I think. Yeah.
Why can't it be the reverse when things people are angry with Bitcoin for whatever reason? Why can't that be a negative 200 to 300 million?
It could, but I think for me, the points of friction on the way out are greater than the points of friction on the way in. You know what I mean? Like if you got to talk to your advisor doesn't want you to sell. Presumably you've been waiting to buy the Bitcoin. I mean, if you look at pent up demand, there's something to that. The inertia that this is coming from on the buy side, you're not going to get the same inertia out. It doesn't really make sense to have both. You can't have both. The pent up demand for the inflows is one thing, but you're not going to have pent up demand for the outflows. You know what I'm saying? Like this doesn't make sense to me.
Anything is possible, Joey. And you were saying that you can't do it on the weekend. Now I just looked at the last three weekends. What happened on Sunday night, Monday morning, before markets opened up, we went in February 25th to the 26th. That was Sunday into Monday. We went from 51 to 54.
Yeah.
Pretty good jump when the markets were closed. Then
when the North American markets closed. When the North American markets closed. Yeah. China and Europe, parts of China and Europe are open, right? So
then it just goes to show you this could happen 24/7. Just about. Unless for that brief moment where markets are closed.
Fair enough. So
because it's Saturday from you third can't, to
but
fourth,
the, but March. Enough of the market's not open to move the price 50% and keep moving the price action quickly in one direction, I think. I honestly think those days are done. I think they're done.
You know what? I've seen enough of this and anything is possible. And I am not going to bat an eye if over a period of time, it's not going to happen in a week, but over a 6 month to a 1 year period of time, theoretically you go from like 72 back to 20 over a long enough period of time. I would not fucking bat an eye. There could be many different reasons why this happens. And you know what? It wouldn't surprise me one fucking bit. So we'll leave it at that. Next up, Joey, Mutiny Wallet. We talked about this very little, right? Very, very little. They claim to be a non-custodial, fully automated Lightning wallet for mobile devices with Nostra integration. Mm-hmm. And up until now, this was only available for browsers. And people at Mutiny decided to rectify this and they released the iOS and Android version. So people can now download it from the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store. And it has been a little while since I have used Mutiny Wallet. I've tried it out several months ago. So it's hard for me to see exactly how it is right now. But at the time, I had some issues with it. It's good that it's no longer 100% browser-based. I wouldn't trust a wallet that is wholly browser-based. There's a bunch of reasons for it, because a browser is a utility that you're using, and the security around that, I think it's rather suspect at best. You never know what's going to happen. But when I did try Mutiny some time ago, I'm not sure if they changed it, but when I did, Mutiny defaulted to their own servers. At the time, I tried looking to see how it is to run my own server. The process wasn't very straightforward. So I think that's kind of a knock against them. And when I was digging into this a little bit further, people that make Mutiny, like I'm just looking at this now, I formed the opinion that the best approach is something which is open source, which Mutiny is. So it's open source, great. But I also like running something locally. I want to have my own servers running it, the whole nine yards. I want to have so much control. Seems that Mutiny is getting there, but right now it's just not there. So I'm going to give them credit that they are getting moving into the right direction, but opening it up for something on the App Store or the Play Store, it's just the front end, the way I understand it, for something on the browser. The real way to use this, the proper way to use this, would be to run your own server, to point everything to it, and just to try to get as much custody of your Bitcoin rather than relying on somebody else's server. By doing so, you have way more control, and privacy is then, you know, you could control the privacy at that particular moment. So yeah, I just want to say that there's good with and bad with Mutiny. I'm not going to say it's all good, but it's certainly not all bad. There's trending in the right direction.
Yeah, Opti in the chat saying there's trade-offs. And there's trade-offs with all this stuff, man. Like the likelihood that we start getting wallets that have figured out these massive swaps between custody and trust, and, you know, especially on the Lightning side, it's going to be very, very difficult. So I'm not holding my breath for that. But like you mentioned, it's going to get better, and it's getting better. All the wallets are competing against each other now in a way they haven't been before, thanks to the fee market and thanks to just the pure volume of people coming into the space. I'm looking forward to seeing what, like, is it possible in your mind that a firm like Fidelity or BlackRock puts together a small team to work on something like Lightning?
I haven't even thought about that.
I don't know if it is or not. Yeah, I don't know, but it's at least not out of the realm of possibility anymore. The Overton window has expanded so much in the last 2 months. Now that these guys are on board and want to make the network as strong and valuable as possible, this is, I think it's important stuff. And I don't know if they're talking about it at that level yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if Fidelity Digital put out a research paper on Lightning in the next, you know, month, 2 months.
Yeah. See, I talked about this. I mentioned it once in our other chat that the reason why I don't see a lot of development going on with Lightning, there is development, but it seems like there's other things that are getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And the reason why is there's not much money that could be made within Lightning. When you set up your own side chain or something like along those lines, there are potentials to make some or a lot of money because you could control the whole system. With Lightning, let's be honest, you know, you could route fees, but how?
But here's the thing, right? Don't think about the routing fees, right? Mm-hmm. Think about the bigger picture. If you're a Fidelity or a BlackRock and you want this thing to rip, okay, you've already sold your clients on the store of value narrative. They get it. They're buying it at, you know, in droves. What if you could start selling them on, okay, this is actually an international settlement asset for the individual as well as the corporation, the central bank, and the state, nation state actor. And here's how it is. It's Lightning Network. We're developing a Lightning Network wallet or app or something, because they're driving the value of the sort of capital B Bitcoin network, right? And that drives value for their investment. It drives value for their customers, drives value for their bottom line. That's more what I mean. Like, I don't think BlackRock is going to put together a bunch of fucking nodes. Like, they're not going to do that.
No, but
BlackRock's not going to be opening channels. Like, they're not going to be doing that.
I didn't express myself properly. The reason why they wouldn't do anything with respect to Lightning is because there's no money in it. They're fiat driven. They're trying to increase their profitability. And by spinning up something else that they could push out and say, look, this is an easy way then to settle money on a global scale. Oh, by the way, we could also take a little bit of the cut on the side, like a Fediment, for instance, right? You don't know, and where they are involved, or a side chain where they are involved. I could see that being more, being something that they'll push more so.
You think, because, eh?
I would imagine so, because they have their hand in the pot and they could take every time they want to, rather than with Lightning, which as a Bitcoiner, I'd prefer to see. There are limitations with Lightning. Don't get me wrong. It's not perfect, but right. I could see them wanting to either build something else or tap into something else that's already pre-built where they could get a little bit of slice of the pie. That's what I think they would do. They're profit driven. They're not Bitcoin driven. They were Bitcoin driven. They would do Lightning, but maybe I could be proven wrong, and I hope I'm proven wrong, but I suspect that it's
probably, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about, since we're talking about development, something called Portal. I'm not sure if you saw this. It's from 22 Devices, and it's a new mobile native hardware wallet, Portal. Yeah. And this one works with a smartphone. So if you have a smartphone like I do and everybody else does, it works with that. It's really interesting. It's open sourced. that's good. And uses NFC to communicate with the phone. But not only that, the NFC also powers the device. So it's using the power from the phone.
I knew you were going to like this. Look at the smile on your face. I knew you were going to like this thing as soon as I saw it.
It's interesting, but it's not perfect. Because, you know, let's be honest. NFC is good, but it's not, you know, there's always going to be some questions surrounding that, especially when you're dealing with your own money here. But there is no physical connection. That's what I'm trying to get at with this NFC. And you could pre-order these devices right now, $100 USD, expected to be shipped either the summer of 2024 this year or Q3 of 2024. So you're going to get it within the next 6 months or so if you pre-order it now. So the good, it's open source. I like that.
Yeah.
The bad, I'm going to say NFC. Like anything to do with NFC, you know, with my cold card, I turned all that shit off. I turned NFC, like it's totally air gap. Now, I understand why they want to do this. If it's for a phone, it's going to be for funds you want to spend on the go, right? So, but even there right away causes me an issue, because when I'm talking about funds that I have that's associated with my phone, there's going to be some security holes. Like a phone is not secure. No matter what phone you're running, there's always going to be some security problems with it. So you're not going to have a lot of Bitcoin associated with it. I hope not. You're going to use this for your spending, but still, this poses a problem that in my mind, it's hard for me to wrap what is the best way moving forward, because ultimately people are going to want to spend Bitcoin and they will spend Bitcoin on the go. You can't spend it from home from your computer. You got to spend it on the go with your phone. So somehow you're going to have to find a way to make use of whatever technology you have to spend it. Maybe this might be it. I don't know. But I think in my eyes, if I were to do it, have Zeus on my phone, connected to my home Lightning node, that is probably the most secure. Or even going a little bit further, maybe having my Linux phone and running something on that where I could actually, you know, it's more of a secure phone and more of a secure OS. Maybe that is the better way to do it, because I don't want to lose anything with my Bitcoin. I want to have that totally secure or as secure as possible with me. But I have to understand the fact that we have to live in reality here and people are not going to go to those extremes. So maybe Portal is the answer. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this works in the real world, though.
Portal looks cool. It's open source. The hardware looks really, really nice. It's like a really fly looking piece of hardware. I don't know what the plan is though for hardware wallets and small spends as the fees go up. So I get the need to have this thing like working with your phone, but like, are you going to spend, you know, like what is the minimum? Like, let's say it's 1 million sats, right? What's 1 million sats right now? $1,000. You're going to keep $1,000
Canadian.
Yeah.
It's like 700.
Do you going to do that for your Bitcoin on your phone and just keep your wallet with you all the time? Like,
that's a good point. I didn't think about that.
I don't know that you would, right? I'm not sure that you would do that. And so the thing I think about more and more, and I don't know if this is even feasible, but are we heading toward a world where you actually are just spending fiat against the Bitcoin you hold? And what you're actually looking for is not quite a hardware wallet, but rather like a hardware like stack verification device of some kind. Like, here's what I have. Here's what I can send you via Lightning another time. And like, you trade on trust. You know, I know it's a dirty word here, but and then
you would it be an open dime? Then you just hand it over physically.
Kinda, maybe something like that, or even like, you know, here's a, you know, assigned set of data that says this is how much Bitcoin is in this wallet at this address. I want to spend this much fiat, and then you settle with like a third party at a later date or something, like a credit card almost against your Bitcoin, and the Bitcoin just doesn't move. Like, to me, that's kind of where you're headed in the fee market the way it is. I as much as I like the hardware, I'm a big guy, like a big trinket guy, but I don't see how as fees go up, anyone is using any of this stuff anymore. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It doesn't fit with the economics of Bitcoin as the price rises.
There's one thing that's going to be taking place. It's the halving. The halving is expected to happen on April 20th. So do your research when it's going to take place as we get closer to it. But on the halving date, the 84,000th block, 840,000 blocks. What is it? IOU podcast. I like that. So there's going to be Casey Rodimer's releasing. Fuck, I forget the name of that stupid thing that he's going to release.
Runes,
that's it. And that potentially can clog up the mempool.
Perfect. So, 2 for 2 from this guy.
Yeah, it just keeps going. bunch of winners. So what I'm trying to say is, if you haven't yet consolidated your UTXOs, and if you don't know how to do it, reach out to me. I'll be happy to show you the process. Do it now. Like the fees, take a look really quick.
I'm looking right now. They're 30 sats per V-byte for high priority. Yeah, 27. So you're about 30 anyways, no matter where you sit in the
priority. They're cheap. In my opinion, they're cheap.
Sure, right? That's always the answer. Cheaper than they're going to be.
You may want to wait, but really, do it now. Do it yesterday, but don't wait till tomorrow, because you never know what's going to happen. Apparently, this whole runes shit on 420 is going to fuck things up. And if you haven't consolidated by then, you're going to wish you've done so. I could be wrong, though. Maybe fees will remain cheaper.
not technical advice, not financial advice.
It's certainly, but it's a good opportunity for people to understand how to do consolidation of your UTXOs, because you're always going to be doing this if you have on-chain transactions. Is buying Bitcoin now, because it's so expensive, it's going to be hard to buy big chunks of Bitcoin. So you're going to have these smaller transactions now that's going to be associated with your hardware device. And so, you know, that's what I'm trying to say. Learn how to do consolidation of transactions right away, because it only makes sense. And if you need help, let me know.
Pretty easy. Sparrow does a good job making it easy for you too. If you haven't, tried it on Sparrow, I recommend it. It's very, very simple.
Let's see. Do we have anything else you want to talk? Do you want to talk about really quick BlackRock wanting to put Bitcoin exposure on their high yield fund?
What a shock. I mean, we don't have to talk about it. I'd rather not, actually, because I can feel my meds wearing off here. Let's push through. Yeah, let's push through.
Let's do this. End the Bitcoin related stuff. Thank you for listening in for the video side. It's going to be a seamless transition to the next part. So with that, don't be a cock.
Are you a fan of the old school NHL 94 game on the Genesis or SNES? Why not check out my show, the NHL 94 Podcast, from tournaments and tactics to the people who make up this community. Check it out wherever you listen to podcasts or find it on YouTube.